424 and enter much. Again, text 42424 and enter MUCH.
Hi, I'm Bob Hardcastle, President and CEO of Delta Investment Services. At Delta, our mission is to build long-term relationships with our clients and help them realize their dreams through continuous, high-quality, long-term, diversified financial investment planning. With over 50 years in the investment field, our Delta team provides financial guidance for our clients that help them meet their financial goals. We want you to feel comfortable with your money, with your estate planning, with your emergency funds, and with retirement. We also offer our SOS, our second opinion service, to non-clients that might want a second opinion on their current investment strategy during these volatile times. For a no-charge, no-pressure financial meeting, call our Delta office at 636-532-0484. 636-532-0484. Or go to our website, moneytalk.org. I'm Bob Hardcastle.
Congratulations to one of the best-run St. Louis companies in the region. Of course, I'm talking about R&R Sanitation Porta Potties. And when it comes right down to it, when you need a porta potty, there's really only one company to call, and that's R&R Sanitation. Whether it is a special event, a wedding, a family reunion, large events, or maybe even construction sites, did you know that most of the top construction firms in St. Louis use R&R Sanitation? Because they're the best. They're bigger. They're 40% larger, which makes for a cleaner toilet longer. They also service on a much more frequent basis. In fact, R&R Sanitation has been so successful here in St. Louis, they are now working in Columbia, Jeff City, and Lake of the Ozarks because so many people have called for their service, they now have had to expand. So for all of your porta potty needs, call R&R Sanitation, 314-776-4000. That's 314-776-4000 or rnrportabletoilets.com. And yes, they really do want your stinking business, R&R Sanitation.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
If you're young and healthy, you don't need life insurance, right? Yeah, that's what I used to think, too, until my brother died at 38. Joe left his wife with two kids, a mortgage, and a stack of bills she couldn't pay. Mary had to sell the house and move everybody into this tiny two-bedroom apartment just to make ends meet. I never want to do that to my wife, so I got life insurance. I called AIG Direct and was really surprised how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. Listen, if you have a family, you should seriously think about getting life insurance. You'll feel a lot better having it. Trust me.
Call AIG Direct for a free, no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes and you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-400-1942. That's 1-800-400-1942. 1-800-400-1942.
Hi, David Fox here, proud founder of two St. Louis companies I started over 23 years ago, Carpet Masters and Hardwood Rescue. If you're in the market for new flooring, you can avoid the hassle of expensive retailers. At Carpet Masters, we bring our store to you with beautiful top brand carpet, hardwood, tile, vinyl, and laminates. We're all about convenience, savings, and guaranteed installs. Visit us online at stlcarpetmasters.com and schedule your shop-at-home appointment today. Carpet Masters, we bring our store to you, stlcarpetmasters.com.
Hi, this is Mike Kelly. When I'm looking to send flowers to a loved one for a birthday, anniversary, or that special occasion, I call my friends at Walter Knoll Florists. Walter Knoll is family-owned and operated and offers custom designs by expert designers, a huge inventory and selection that only the largest florist can offer, with quality and care that no grocery store florist can meet. They have several locations in the St. Louis metro area to serve you. Order online today at WKF.com. Walter Knoll Florists, your personal florist since 1883.
Here's the scoop on garden soil. Sometimes it needs help from the Home Depot, where bags of Miracle-Gro garden soil are a special buy, three for just $10. It improves existing soil with nutrients plants need for stronger roots, so they'll hit the ground running, starting with much better ground. Miracle-Gro garden soil, three bags, $10. Now at the number one retailer for Scott's Miracle-Gro, the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through August 2nd while supplies last. Contiguous U.S. only. Limit 80 per customer.
It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Tim are here with me, and so is Max. joining us for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Max. How are you?
Hello there, Paul. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks.
Yeah, good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
It's nice to be any place that's air-conditioned on a day like today.
It's true. It is far too hot outside.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the original $189 window company, the number one replacement window company in the United States, online at windowworldst.louis.com. So we've got a couple of movies that are opening in theaters today. One of them is the new Spider-Man movie, which we will get to second. I'm going to make people wait for the Spider-Man review because I have been bursting with excitement to review this next movie since I saw it 2 weeks ago.
It's a film that I've heard not one negative comment about from anyone.
And you're not going to hear one today from me. The movie is called The Big Sick, and I will cut to the chase. It's the best movie I've seen this year. It's a romantic comedy that's based on the lives of Kumail Nanjiani, who you may know if you've ever watched the HBO series Silicon Valley, and Emily Gordon. The two of them co-wrote the movie. In the movie, Kumail Nanjiani plays himself, and Zoe Kazan plays Emily Gordon, and their chemistry on screen is absolutely wonderful. They start off with a nice start to the relationship. He's a stand-up comedian in real life and in the movie, so the stand-up comedy scenes work. Remember how I've talked about that so many times this year about how they don't when actors do it? But when stand-ups do it, it works. And she laughs loudly at something that he says on stage, and it gets his attention, and they have some banter back and forth from stage to audience. And then later on, they meet, and it's obvious that they're having some chemistry there. So that gets them off to a nice start, and then they hit a rough patch. And then the relationship enters unforeseen territory when Emily gets mysteriously sick and has to be put into a medically induced coma. Now, I am not spoiling anything about the movie because that is the bottom line on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship that runs into this medically induced coma situation. So Kumail goes to the hospital to check on this woman that he's obviously grown very fond of. And he encounters her parents, who are played in the movie by Holly Hunter and Ray Romano, who at first don't know why he's there or what to make of him. And meanwhile, we also get to meet Kumail's parents because he goes to dinner at their house with his brother and his sister and his parents. And every time he's there, a Pakistani woman, he's Pakistani, his family's Pakistani, a Pakistani woman just happens to drop by because his wife, his mom is trying to set him up in an arranged marriage, just like she had had with her husband. And so there are very funny scenes with them. And there are wonderful scenes and wonderful chemistry between him and Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. And we do get to see some scenes of him plying his trade as a comedian in Chicago. And we also have other people who have done that, like A.D. Bryant, who is now on Saturday Night Live, and Bo Burnham, who's had a couple of Netflix specials, and another guy named Kurt Brownoler, who I didn't know anything about. They are all people who've had experience in and around real comedy clubs, and so it works on stage. Now, if you don't know Kumail Nanjiani, he is a guy who has a very dry wit and very dry delivery, particularly on Silicon Valley and in his stand-up as well. And it comes through in the script, and this script crackles every time he's on screen, which is for most of the movie. I laughed out loud several times, a couple of dozen times, in fact. That's how funny it is.
Mm.
But I'm going to have to watch it again because I saw it with a large crowd at a screening where people were laughing so much, I missed the next line or two because people were enjoying the movie so much. Now, I cannot imagine how difficult it must have been for Kumail and Emily to go through this situation in the first place, be so sick that they had to put you into a medically induced coma, and then to say to each other, you know what? This is a comedy. What? A medically induced coma comedy? And then they had to write that script and relive it, and then he has to act it out, and she has to watch him acting that out because she's on the set
with
all the time
woman,
while he's doing that with Zoe Kazan and having sex scenes with her. So it seems like a very odd way to come up with a romantic comedy plot, but it works. And I'm telling you right now, this is warm, it's honest, it's clever, it's funny. It's going to be on my best of 2017 list.
Nice.
In fact, it's likely to be at the top because I did not find anything wrong with this movie, even though, as sometimes happens when Judd Apatow produces, which he did this one, and his name's all over it.
So wait a minute, it's not a half an hour too long?
It's 2 hours long. Most Judd Apatow movies are like 220, 230, mm-hmm. and those you can cut 20 or 30 minutes from. This one's 2 hours long, but it never limps along. Nothing seems extraneous, and that's why I'm giving The Big Sick a perfect 10 out of 10.
Whoa!
Look at that.
Not only that, I'm going to predict that Holly Hunter gets an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress.
Wow!
And I predict that Nanjiani and Gordon, Kumail and Emily, who wrote the script, they will get an Oscar nomination.
Original screenplay.
For original screenplay. It's that good. Now, comedies don't do that well at the Oscars, so they won't be up for Best Picture. But for me, this is the Best Picture of 2017. It's called The Big Sick.
I was reading something on Twitter about how they were saying that one of their biggest inspirations was Four Weddings and a Funeral, the mm-hmm. movie from Richard Curtis,
mm-hmm.
and how you know they loved Hugh Grant in that movie, and they were kind of trying to pace their script alongside that one,
yeah.
and how they met Richard Curtis at some award show, and he actually, upon hearing they were making this movie and writing it, and he gave them his blessing, and he sent them film strips, like film negatives from Four Weddings, as mm-hmm. like a congratulations on making this movie,
wow.
which is just incredible.
Yeah.
So.
Is this wide release?
It is in wide release. It's not just, it's one of those movies that you would think, well, that's just going to play at the Tivoli or at the Plaza Frontenac. It's playing in a lot of places, and it's out there. It's a great date movie. It's a great couples movie. It's a great movie. It's called The Big Sick. I thought Hidden Figures was going to be my number one movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one may slide past it because that only got a 9.5.
Whoa.
This one gets a 10. All right, now let's move on to the big release movie, the one that's going to be in 3,500 screens
sure,
across the country.
Sure, the one that will make $100 million this weekend.
Is it going to do better than Wonder Woman?
I think it'll open stronger, sure, because people are more familiar with Spider-Man. I mean, they've had, what, 5 earlier movies to get a handle on this character. So,
mm-hmm.
Although I think that might actually hurt the movie as well, because as good as Spider-Man Homecoming is, and it is good,
yeah.
I think general audiences have a bit of Spidey fatigue. And this is because back in 2002, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe rolled out with Iron Man and all these giant movies, Sony made a Spider-Man movie directed by Sam Raimi with Tobey Maguire. There was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. It was a giant hit. It came out the same year as the second Star Wars prequel and actually did better than that movie. It was followed up with a sequel, Spider-Man 2, with Alfred Molina as Dr. Octopus, that is still held in high regard. People call it one of the best superhero films ever.
You know what wasn't one of the best superhero films ever?
What's that?
The third one.
True. The third one where the studio says, you know, let's have Venom in there, and let's do this, and let's do this, and Raimi sort of lost control, and it didn't do very well, and fans turned against it. And so Raimi had plans to do a fourth movie with the villain, the Vulture, and actually signed John Malkovich to play the Vulture
Ooh,
in that movie.
He's going to be a good villain, sure.
Absolutely, and he was going to bring it back to basics. And Sony sort of balked and said, we don't know, the fans didn't like that third one, you're fired, you're out, and they dismissed everybody. In the meantime, Marvel launches their own cinematic universe. They've got Iron Man, they've got Thor, they've got Hulk, they've got Captain America. They're leading up to the Avengers. They come knocking on Sony's door. They want Spider-Man back. Sony goes, why would we ever do that? We're going to make all the money in the world. No, we're not going to give him back to you. And so they reboot the whole franchise with Andrew Garfield. Well, they made a huge mistake with that film because they decided to retell the origin we had just seen
yes.
about 5 years earlier.
Yes.
There was no reason to do that. So this franchise never got a chance to be its own animal because it just completely was a retread of that first franchise.
Right.
It was a bad, bad movie with a bad performance from Andrew Garfield.
And a bad sequel.
Well, an even worse sequel. And just like Spider-Man 3 was bad, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was even worse. It's dreadful. It's joyless. It's sour and dour. I hated that movie, and I grew up reading Spider-Man comics. Spider-Man is a really important character to me, the nerd, and they've never really gotten them right. And so, yes, I understand the fatigue with Spider-Man. Like, okay, this is the sixth time we've seen him on screen. You know, roll your eyes. But I think what's different is Sony, with their tail tucked between their legs, went over to Marvel and said, okay, let's work out a deal. We still want to have some rights to this franchise, but you can be in control and give us a story, and we'll produce it. And what Sony got out of it was they were able to have Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., and a couple of other characters that I won't spoil show up. And then now this character is a part of the Marvel movies that we've been watching since 2008. What this does is, for the first time, it gives us a great picture with Peter Parker, a 15-year-old kid who has no idea what he's doing, and a hero who's not really a developed hero yet. These are the stories that I enjoyed reading when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. We've never had them. And so for the first time, we have Spider-Man like the Spider-Man that we all grew up reading. If you are a huge nerd, you're going to be really excited about that fact. If you're not, and if you're like, oh, another Spider-Man movie, I don't know, you don't have to know anything about the character. They're not going to retread any kind of origin. All you have to go do is have fun, mm-hmm. because this is a very fun movie. It was actually co-written by one of the stars of Freaks and Geeks, speaking of Judd Apatow. And he's become a screenwriter now, and he really infuses this with a very John Hughes kind of vibe. It really does feel like an old 1980s picture. There's great musical cues, everything from the Rolling Stones to English Beat. It's a very fun movie, too. And if you think about the last five Spider-Man movies, they've really tried to go into the pathos of Peter Parker and woe is me and I can't make my rent. And his struggle is a big part of that character, but he also has fun. And it can be at times a lighthearted book. We finally have a lighthearted Spider-Man film. So I'm sort of two minds about this movie. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a whole lot of fun. It's light as a feather. But it's also the sixth time we've seen the character. Mm-hmm. So it's a little hard for me to come on the air and say, I'm really recommending this. Please go see it. It's one of the best films of the summer. I could say that about Wonder Woman, because we'd never had a big screen Wonder Woman film.
Right.
And so if you're going to compare the two most recent superhero films, I'd still rank Wonder Woman ahead of Homecoming, because we've seen Spider-Man a lot. But I guess what I'm saying is we've never seen him this good and portrayed this well.
Okay.
I am giving it a positive review.
All right. Let me just jump in here and add one thing that you left out. Anytime you have a superhero movie or a super spy movie, you need a super villain. And you need a super actor to play that super villain. That's why if you go back to the first Batman movie, Jack Nicholson had a much better part than Michael Keaton did in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Michael Keaton plays the villain in this. He plays the Vulture.
Yes, from Batman to Birdman to Vulture.
To Spider-Man.
Yes.
And Michael Keaton is so good in this. I'm so glad to hear and see him having this career renaissance,
yes,
of the last few years. Mm-hmm. I thought The Founder earlier this year was a
great,
terrific movie.
Yeah.
Everything he does has that little touch of realism on the edge of madness.
I'm glad that you brought him up, because a lot of reviewers that I'm skimming here on Twitter, they're not really mentioning Vulture. They're not mentioning Michael Keaton.
He makes the movie.
He does make the movie. And if you think about it, all the Marvel villains, they're probably the weakest part in all the Marvel films. You've really only had Loki be a really good villain. Other than that, there's really nobody else that you can point to. They're all forgettable. And in the Spider-Man films, the same way. Green Goblin, Sandman, Venom, nobody cares. Dr. Octopus, Alfred Molina, did a great job. This is the best villain since then, because his motivations, which I won't spoil here, are realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he plays a couple of those scenes at the end, which again I won't spoil, are fantastic. Also, the suit is great. I mean, you feel the weight of this Vulture costume, and you know, the talons and the wings. It's really well done.
Yep.
Is this a true story?
It's based on.
Oh, okay.
Based on a true story.
Peter Parker's a friend of mine. I could call him right now. I just don't want to.
Wow.
We haven't even mentioned the name of the kid who plays Peter Parker slash Spider-Man. His name is Tom Hammond.
Holland. Yeah.
We should also mention that Robert Downey Jr. does show up in the movie.
He does.
As Tony Stark, who's the mentor to this character.
Did you wait till the end credits? Did you
stay through
the entire credits?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Because somebody there had the after credits app and was looking at
it
before the movie started and said, oh, there's something that you're supposed to stay around for.
I actually really liked the very end credit scene. I thought it was one of the more clever things that they've done.
I agree. And I also can't let us finish this review of this movie without mentioning Marissa Tomei.
Aunt May.
Holy cow.
You've never seen Aunt May like this.
Marissa Tomei is
not 90.
Marissa Tomei is 52 years old and still absolutely gorgeous and still great on screen. What charisma this woman has and presence and chemistry with everybody that she encounters on screen. It's great.
So not being a big comic book nerd like myself,
yes,
your thoughts going into Homecoming before you watched it, were you sort of like, oh, another Spider-Man, or were you excited?
I was, oh, another Spider-Man.
Okay. Sure.
Now, I did not see the two Andrew Garfields because,
oh, good.
Because I said, oh, no, I'm done. Because
no
I saw the first three with Tobey Maguire, mm-hmm. and three turned me off from the idea completely.
Sure.
Forever. But not forever ended last week when I saw this at a screening. And
it's fun, right? It's delightful.
It is. I thought it was good. I like the supporting cast. Jon Favreau, Laura Harrier, Zendaya, Donald Glover, Hannibal Buress is very funny in
there. Tony Revioli from the Grand Budapest Hotel is Flash Thompson.
And Bokeem Woodbine, a name I remember because he was on the second season of Fargo on FX. And you don't forget a name like Bokeem Woodbine.
Sure.
He was great on that, and he's very good in this as well. I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice.
And I am not a comic book superhero nerd like you are, so I'm curious what you thought of it.
You know, I'm giving it a solid 8. It would probably be higher for me if we hadn't had the previous 5 films, and also it had Wonder Woman not come out this same year.
Yeah.
So I will give it a solid 8.
I think the high school portions of the story feel a little obvious and kind of flat, but the rest of it pretty good. So, all right, we both liked it a lot.
Good.
Now, I've got 1 minute left for you to throw in your thoughts on Baby Driver, which I reviewed a week or two ago, and thought was okay.
I agree with you. Yeah, it is wonderfully constructed. It's beautifully put together. Edgar Wright is a very talented person. But for all the rest of his movies, like Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World, this is probably my least favorite of his. So mm-hmm. It comes in at the bottom. I would still recommend it, though. It's really well put together. Ansel Elgort is great. And actually, he'll be a guest on my show tomorrow night at 10 p.m.
Excellent. So. Okay. Would you agree with me that it seemed like he came up with the soundtrack before he came up with the script?
Absolutely, and I do think the ending is a little long. I didn't need the villain coming back 4 different times.
Yeah.
But other than that,
there was a little fatal attraction thing going on there, wasn't there?
I think so. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Definitely.
You're going to have Al Gore on tomorrow night?
Yes, Al Gore, the creator of the internet, for an Inconvenient Foise show tomorrow night, 10 o'clock.
You know,
that
you're joking around.
Fabulous.
You're joking around, but he does have a movie coming out this summer.
That's
Al
right.
Gore?
An Inconvenient sequel.
Yeah.
I think it's coming out in August.
I believe so.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for the Showbiz Show today, because coming up next, Cliff Nesteroff will be here to talk about comedy, which he's got a show about on Viceland TV next week, and then CNN's history of comedy as well. We'll do that right after this on the Big 550 KTRS.
And we're going to check on traffic right now with Tim Weiland. Crews working with a new incident now on westbound 270 at the Chain of Rocks Bridge has you jammed all the way back to Route 3. The left lane is blocked there. That incident on southbound 170 at Ladue has traffic jamming up from Page through Ladue. Slow pockets mostly in the left lanes all the way down through Highway 40 from there. Southbound 270 looks like it's getting a bit better. You have a stop-and-go pocket from Ladue down through the Clayton Road overpass, again from Marshall Road through Highway 44. Still working with the only the left lane open on northbound 55 down in the Festus area, about a 4 to 5 mile backup. Eastbound Highway 44 slows at Jefferson. Eastbound 40 at Jefferson to the Poplar Street Bridge. This report brought to you by Staples. It's your office away from your office with everything you need to print, scan, or fax. Access files from a USB, email, or the cloud, and use self-serve machines to get back to business. Staples, it's pro time. I'm Tim Weiland from the Big 550 KTRS Traffic Desk.
We're St. Louis's biggest conversation.
The Big 550 KTRS.
KTRS.
Hi, Mark Goldstein here for Edwards Carpet. For our last holiday sale, we put together a great offer that slashed our margins, and it was so successful that the volume more than made up for it. If you missed out last time, here's your second chance. From right now till Sunday, July 9th, we're having our Independence Day sale. First, you'll get our all-inclusive pricing that includes carpet, pad, installation, the take-up and haul-away of your old carpet, and the moving of your furniture, starting at just $2.99 a square foot. We're also offering special pricing on the newest thermoplastic-backed carpets and the newest waterproof floors. Then we make it even more affordable by giving you 12 months interest-free financing, and then you'll pay no tax. So long story short, super low, all-inclusive sale prices, 12 months interest-free money, and no tax. Even if you're just considering new flooring, this is the opportunity to take advantage of. Look for our ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or visit us at edwardscarpet.com. And happy Independence Day to the greatest country on earth.
Come on down to Edwards Carpet Stores.
many of you are thinking about replacing your old deck or adding a new one to your outdoor living space? Hi, everybody. McGraw-Millhaven here for Outdoor Living at I-44 in Big Bend. Outdoor Living has a showroom with over 15 different deck displays, 30 different rail options, fences, gazebos, pergolas, screen porches, fire pits, built-in grills, and sunrooms, just to name some of what they have. They also operate their own lumber yard to supply all of the decking materials used for your project. So if you're a professional or an amateur or a homeowner, where are you going to go? Outdoor Living. The Outdoor Living also stocks AZEK decking made of 100% cellular PVC. It provides superior stain, scratch, mold, mildew resistance, and comes in 17 colors to choose from. You can get all the material, and you can do it yourself, or you can have a professional do it, courtesy of Outdoor Living, Inc. I-44 and Big Bend in Kirkwood, 314-966-3325, or OutdoorLivingInc.com.
Credit card debt is like quicksand. Once you fall into it, it's almost impossible to get out. That's because once they've trapped you, the credit card companies keep sucking you deeper into debt with outrageous interest rates and fees. But now you can pull yourself out of debt just by reaching for your phone and calling Credit Associates. If you owe $5,000 or more on your credit cards and you can't afford to pay off your debt, you don't have to. Let us settle your debt for a fraction of what you owe. We'll even show you how much you could save. For free information, call 1-800-900-1802. You can get completely free from debt faster than you ever imagined, without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee. You've got nothing to lose but your debt. So reach for your phone and pull yourself out of debt with this life-changing free information from Credit Associates. 1-800-900-1802. That's 1-800-900-1802.
If you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of an affordable hearing solution called MD Hearing Aid. MD Hearing Aid is rigorously tested by audiologists, doctor designed, and FDA registered. The MD Hearing Aid delivers excellent hearing improvement while saving you more than 80% off the average price of a traditional hearing aid. And you can try it for 45 days risk-free with a 100% money-back guarantee by calling 1-800-300-9917. MD Hearing Aid is a medical-grade hearing aid that's so discreet, people may not even notice when you're wearing it. MD Hearing Aid lets you hear what you've been missing without the hassle of doctor's visits and expensive and time-consuming fitting appointments. So again, if you or someone you love is suffering from hearing loss, please give yourself this life-changing in-home trial. Try MD Hearing Aid risk-free for 45 days with a 100% money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-300-9917. Plus, you'll get free shipping and free batteries for a year. 1-800-300-9917.
Hi, this is Molly from the Piccadilly at Manhattan. The backyard barbecue season is gearing up. Come join us Wednesdays for our 24-ounce pork steak that you can cut with a fork. We smoke them with hickory and charcoal and season them with our own rub and sauce. Pork not your thing? Get a brisket burger that we grind in-house every day, finished with American cheese on a Hawaiian bun. We have daily specials and a full bar. We're open Tuesday through Saturday. Call for details or a reservation today. 314-646-0016. See you soon.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Cliff Nesteroff is back on the show today. Cliff was on with me about a year and a half ago to talk about his book called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy. It was a comprehensive look back at people who had been making you laugh on stage and on screen for almost a century. And now he's back with two TV projects. One is the CNN History of Comedy, which will come back for our second season on July 16th. He's a contributor to that. And he also has a show on Viceland, which will be a five-night special starting Monday. It's called Funny How. And I thought this would be the only appropriate way to introduce him.
Really funny. Really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
Just, you know, you're just funny. It's, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Hey, Tommy, no, you got it all wrong. Hey?
Oh, Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, so? Let me understand this, because I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you? I make you laugh? What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Well, here's the guy who will tell you what's funny. That, of course, is Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, and this is Cliff Nesteroff. Hi, Cliff. How are you?
I'm very well, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
That is the most editing I've had to do of an introductory clip in a long, long time to get all the F-bombs out for broadcast.
Yeah, I was wondering there for a second how it was going to go. You're going to jeopardize your FCC license just for me. I'm flattered.
No, we came through. It's good. So tell me about this Viceland series. What's it about, and who do you have on?
Well, first of all, it's on a TV channel I've learned that nobody has.
Yeah.
Iceland.
Yep.
And you've got the reference correctly. It is called Funny How, as a hat tip to Goodfellas. We struggled to find a title. It's a show about comedy, and there's a lot of shows out there right now about comedy, and they all have different kinds of names, and it's sort of like the way they used to come up with names for comedy clubs in the 1980s. It's a big struggle to come up with something that isn't corny sounding,
you know?
And something that doesn't use the word mirth, which is a word nobody uses unless they're writing a headline for something about comedy, you know?
Right.
But Funny How is sort of like a Anthony Bourdain show, but instead of about food, it's about comedy, and instead of Anthony Bourdain, it's me. We travel North America exploring different subcultures of stand-up comedy. We have one episode that explores the subculture of Christian stand-up comedy. There's a whole subculture of people out there who make a living doing stand-up on a church circuit. So we followed them around to see what that is like, if it's any different than the secular community. When I told people about this subculture of Christian stand-up comedy, a lot of people asked me the same thing. They said, huh, Christian comedy, are they funny?
Uh-huh.
The assumption was that they wouldn't be funny, but
yeah.
I learned by shadowing these people, one of whom was this woman named Shonda Pierce, who is the highest-selling Christian comedian in America, sells out theaters, has her own tour bus, and then I also followed these guys that are more like sort of low-level schleppers doing a tiny little church circuit, going to small towns, performing for an audience of 20 people, 30 people, not sure if they're ever going to get paid kind of thing, and I learned that it's exactly the same as the experience of being a secular comedian. You have the same anxieties, the same worries, and the same process of getting good and making a living. So that's one of the episodes, but we do that through several episodes in the series, kind of exploring, not necessarily an underbelly, but sort of unexamined areas of comedy. We went to Orlando, Florida for one episode about comedians on their way up and comedians on their way down.
Oh,
and I know that sounds, yeah, I know that sounds weird. But
yeah, let's explore this for just a second.
The
concept of comedians on their way down, it was very, very easy, as you wrote in the book, the comedians, during the vaudeville years, if you came up with an act, you could do that act on stage hundreds of times every year in cities all over the country. Nobody ever really got to see you do it twice unless they paid for two shows in the same theater. But that was before television would come around, and one shot on the Carson show, or before that on the Ed Sullivan show, would blow all your material and you'd be left with nothing, right?
Now you have
comedians who are going out and they're doing concerts and stage shows, plus they have Netflix specials, so they have to create all of this extra new material on an ongoing basis, and at a certain point they burn out and can't come up with anything else funny, and that's when the downhill slide starts, right?
Yeah, it can be a real struggle. Netflix is a double-edged thing, you know. It's great that all these comedians have an opportunity and something to work toward, but a lot of guys and girls do get specials before they're ready. You know, they sign a contract, they have to deliver a special by a certain date, regardless if the material is ready. In the old days, a comedian would work 10 years before they recorded the special.
Yep.
Now there's this new sort of concept that you have to come up with a new special every year, which is frankly impossible. So a lot of these specials vary widely in quality. Some of them, in fact, have a very strong 10 minutes and then a very weak half an hour for the rest of it, you know. So that is kind of unfair to comedians themselves, but they need to take a step back and maybe manage their art more than their ambition.
You know, there was a time when being on the Carson show, now we're talking about a show that went off the air 25 years ago, but there was a time where that was the goal for comedians, to get on the Carson show, and then it was get on the Carson show, get your spot, and then you'll get a sitcom, because they all wanted to be as successful as Freddie Prinze was in the first year after he did the Carson show, before he committed suicide, of course. And then they all wanted to follow along in the Seinfeld and Ray Romano path. Everybody was getting into stand-up to get a sitcom. Now are they all getting into stand-up to get a Netflix special?
Yeah, sort of. You know, it's funny because people always think of comedians as great non-conformists. But when it comes to the pressure of a career, they definitely conform. So when I did stand-up, when I was a boy, when I was 18, I moved to Toronto, and all the comedians that I met were auditioning for commercials and appearing in commercials. And I just wanted to do stand-up. I was a punk rock kid. I rebelled against the idea of corporations, corporate branding, and advertising. And yet all these comedians were auditioning for commercials. So I was like, well, if I want to be a comedian, I guess that means I have to audition for commercials.
Mm.
So I, too, conformed and started doing these commercials for candy bars and stuff like that. And I hated it, you know, but I felt the pressure, like that's what you were supposed to do. So it's hard when you're young and you don't know any better. You're going to conform because you think that's the way it works. Hollywood is like that, too. When young people move to Hollywood, they think they have to look a certain way, act a certain way. The phrase networking gets used a lot. But all of that is nonsense. I mean, everything that happens in your career is going to happen organically so long as you're true to yourself and so long as you're patient. So that's kind of a lesson that's very hard to learn when you're very young, but I think everybody comes to when they're much older. So, for instance, in this episode of Funny How, comedians on their way up and comedians on their way down, one of the people that we explored and who was on their way down, so to speak, was Michael Winslow, the man who did the sound effects in the Police Academy movies and did stand-up all through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we profiled him. He lives in Orlando. He hasn't been heard from for quite a while. And we also profiled a young up-and-comer who was very ambitious, had a lot of new things happening for her and opportunities. But what I learned over the course of the episode, the new young up-and-comer who had a lot of stuff going for her was miserable because it wasn't happening fast enough for her. And Michael Winslow, who we met in Orlando, was the most content and happy with the state of his career.
Hmm.
So it really belied my initial concept of the idea, thinking that somebody on their way up would be the happy story and so-called somebody on their way down would be the sad story, and it was completely the opposite.
That's very interesting. You also have one episode about comedians bombing on stage, which every comedian does, particularly at the beginning, right?
Well, of course, yeah. That's how you learn how to do anything. I described it to somebody recently. The process of learning how to do stand-up is the same as any job training. You get hired at a job. Your first day on the job, you don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your first week on the job, you're making all kinds of mistakes. Second, third week, you're still struggling, but, you know, person that's training you is saying, well, don't worry, you'll figure it out eventually. And in your mind, you're thinking, they're crazy. This is too hard. I can never figure this out. And a year later, you're a manager of the place and you're training other people. Stand-up is sort of like that. You have to bomb in order to learn. You whittle out what doesn't work, you retain what does work, and eventually, slowly but surely, you build an act.
Right,
that being said, there's still conditions in which you could bomb as a multi-year professional. That still happens as well, and there's all kinds of circumstantial reasons for that. But in this episode, we kind of try and explore the existential feeling one gets while you're on stage bombing, the audience is staring at you, and how something is going on in your thought process completely separate from what's coming out of your mouth.
That's very interesting, because even guys, and I know you have veteran comedians like Dave Attell and others that you talk to on this show, they actually feel like there's an out-of-body thing going on where their mouth is doing their act, but their brain is doing something else?
Well, all stand-up is like that, even when you're killing. I certainly have that interesting feeling. It's almost impossible to really explain it to somebody who doesn't do it or hasn't done it. It's a very transcendental thing where you'll be on stage telling your jokes, they're getting laughs. Meanwhile, out of the corner of your eye, you can see a guy at the back of the room who promised to watch your act, and he's flirting with some girl, so you're thinking about that. Meanwhile, you see a guy in the other corner of the room who's really drunk, and you're thinking he might be some trouble. Meanwhile, you're also conscious of how much time you have left, whether you need to speed up or slow down, who's coming on next. Maybe there's a girl looking at you in the front row who you're interested in. There's a million things going on in your mind, an internal dialogue, while your mouth is moving and you're doing material, getting laughs. And the more experience you have doing stand-up, the more confidence you have doing stand-up, the more true that is. I don't want to call it phoning it in necessarily, but you're able to sort of multitask in your mind in a way that is, it sounds very strange to describe it this way, but it's almost spiritual in a sense. It's almost it's kind of a supernatural element to it, an energy that's impossible to describe to somebody who hasn't done it.
When a veteran comedian who has material that killed all across the country has a show that doesn't go that well, can it be the audience's fault, or is it always the comedian's fault?
No, it can be the audience's fault. It totally depends on the circumstance. You know, you need more information for me to give you a proper conclusion. We're speaking hypothetically here. But, you know, sometimes if you do a show outside during the day in a tent, you know, and you bomb, well, you were outside during the day in a tent. There's dogs barking. There's babies crying. You know, any number of things could go wrong. It could depend on who you had to follow. Maybe they said something racist right before you went on and it put a pall over the whole audience. Or maybe you're doing some sort of corporate gig and right before you go on, they have a moment of silence for their good friend who just died. You know, there's any number of weird circumstances that will diminish your ability to make that audience laugh and perhaps bomb. It's frequently circumstantial. And then there's some that are just inexplicable where you would bomb. But a professional knows that it's easy enough to erase a bad show. All you have to do is go out the next night and do another show.
Yeah, and have a good show. Don't let that one bog you down, because if you then you get in the rut and you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me once where I didn't bomb for a year, and then I bombed once, twice, three times, four, you know, like six times in a row, and I could not figure out what was going on. It was almost a running gag among the comedians because it had not happened in so long. That sounds like a self-serving story, but it was it is a very strange thing that often it is the comedian's fault, but often it's just circumstantial.
Cliff, who are the modern comedians that up-and-comers look at as role models, the Carlins, the Kleins, the Pryors of today?
Bill Burr is considered maybe the best by the male comedians who are in their 20s. As far as women go, there's Maria Bamford, although she does something that's almost unable for anybody else to emulate. You know, you can watch Maria Bamford, admire Maria Bamford, and it's very difficult to be influenced by Maria Bamford because she's very unique. Although I saw her do a one-woman show about a year ago, and I had a bit of an epiphany as I was watching her, because she tends to do characters, and she does this show where she plays her mother, and it's really impressive. And I realized she's almost more like a Jack Lemmon or a Peter Sellers than a Richard Pryor or a Lily Tomlin or a George Carlin, where she just totally is absorbed by the character she's playing, to the extent that when you watch her, you don't even realize that it's her anymore. You get lost in the character. She's so incredibly talented at evoking these other beings. You know?
Last thing I want to explore with you is whether stand-up comedy can change things in society, and I'm thinking particularly of not just stand-ups, but all these political comedy TV shows, Samantha Bee, John Oliver, Bill Maher, Stephen Colbert, the other late-night hosts who do Trump material and so much other political stuff in their monologues or their entire half-hour shows or longer on a regular basis. Do you think they have any impact on changing society?
No, I don't, and that's not the answer that anybody wants to hear. But I'm not saying that they can't, but as a comedy historian, I have no historical example to give you or precedent to show you where it has ever changed anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, we had to laugh to cover the pain, to get through the pain. Laughter comes from pain. Yeah, maybe, but it doesn't prevent death. It doesn't prevent fascism. You know, it's still overwhelmed by those types of things. I have an episode of my show, Funny How, where we address that issue. Actually, I talked to two young comedians, Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher, who are outspoken, who are political. And I said, I don't think comedy is a vehicle for change, because if it were, then The Onion and The Colbert Report and Jon Stewart's Daily Show, which have existed now, or did exist, 15-year run, 20-year run, they would have prevented a reactionary swing in America, you would think, if it had a true effect, right? Instead, we went in the opposite direction of the point of view of those comedy platforms. But what Rhea and Cameron said to me was, with all due respect, Cliff, and they're two, they're married, they're two women. They said, with all due respect, Cliff, all the people you mentioned are predominantly representative of the patriarchy, of the hierarchy, white men. Whereas every social movement and movement for progress in the history of America has come from the bottom up. The civil rights movement, the women's suffrage movement, all of those have been purported by minorities or the oppressed. So in order for comedy to be a vehicle for social change, it has to be the voices of the minorities and the oppressed, not those who are in that position of power. So that was what they said to me, and I thought that was a very convincing argument.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it happen yet, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't.
Cliff Nesteroff's show, Funny How, will air Monday through Friday next week on Viceland. Find that channel on your DVR, set to record it. And then the following week, he'll be a contributor to the CNN History of Comedy series, which is returning. And he also has a classic showbiz podcast on Stitcher Premium. And that book is still in on sale. It's a terrific read. It's called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy. And today, Cliff, you have broken the record for plugs on my show. Congratulations.
Wow, I got a lot going on. Holy moly, I better get cracking.
You do. I'm glad you could make time to do this. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Paul. My pleasure.
That's Cliff Nesteroff. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.
And time for another check on traffic with Tim Weiland.
Well, we had that earlier incident southbound 170 at Ladue. Now we had an incident northbound 170 at Ladue. Northbound was jammed up from Highway 40, and southbound 170 is getting better now. It slowed Delmar down through 40. Westbound 44 is hitting the brakes as you go through the work zone from Arsenal through Shrewsbury, again from Guyer to 270. Eastbound 44 is jamming up from Bowles to the Merrimack River Bridge downtown, Jefferson to 55, and you still have that road work going on northbound 55 down around the Festus area, yet the backup is getting, it's only about 2 miles now. It was about 4 to 6 miles before. This traffic report is brought to you by Staples. Staples is your office away from your office with everything you need to print, scan, or fax. Access files from a USB, email, or the cloud, and use self-serve machines to get back to business. Staples, it's pro time. I'm Tim Weiland from the Big 550 KTRS Traffic Desk.
Traffic reports when you need them, even in the middle of your workday. The Big 550 KTRS. Depend on it.
Hey, it's John Carney for Allen Roofing, and with storm season, again, the top of your house getting a beating. Turn to a name you can trust, people that are local and have been here a while. And when I say a while, I mean 1972. Contractor Magazine has named them one of the tops in the country. So for your siding, for your gutters, for your roof, turn to somebody and somebody here. They've done their homework. Do yours. Allen Roofing, online at aroofing.com.
Load up the chariots, we're off to the Muni. A funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, now through the 11th. Sponsored by Clarkson Eye Care. Tickets available now at Muni.org or at the Muni box office.
Want to win a rockin' trip from Jersey Mike's and Pepsi? Stop in Jersey Mike's today to enter. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends August 14th. See official rules at PepsiRockThisWay.com.
ABC Radio News, awarded the Edward R. Murrow Award for overall excellence, is heard exclusively on the Big 550 KTRS St. Louis.